Welcome to the H2O World Podcast.
This is the podcast for anyone who loves life on the water. I'm Shelley Jory Lee, and for this episode, I'm absolutely in my comfort zone. With Sir Robin away sailing, I catch up with the story of one of the world's most iconic powerboats.
This is the H2O World Podcast.
But first, I think we can make contact with Sir Robin. Robin, where are you?
Hello, Shelley. I'm looking forward to hearing about Bluebird. But actually, I'm in Ireland. I'm in a lovely little place called Crosshaven. And I'm at the oldest yacht club in the world, the Royal Cork Yacht Club, which was founded in 1720. We just arrived here last night, having been cruising the west coast of Ireland, just taking it easy, exploring the country, dropping in the evening to pubs, which are so different. They're very friendly here. And I tell you the thing I like, yeah, Jenny, everyone waves, even the and everyone says, how are you? The atmosphere is just so friendly. It's been absolutely lovely. So we had a wonderful couple of weeks just pottering around the south coast of Ireland. And I have to say, I can recommend it to anyone.
Fabulous. Now, I know you're obviously legendary for sailing on your own, but you're not doing this on your own this time, are you? Who's with you?
Right, I've got a lovely crew. Jarvahi, who joined me from Portsmouth. We've got Mike Vlasto, who was, well, for 10 years, the operations director of the RNLI. And he's been sort of going through lifeboat stations and meeting up with old friends as we go around the coast. James Trafford, a lawyer who sails a lot. Richard, who's Richard Smith, joined us also from Portsmouth. And there's one other. I'll think of it in a minute. But
is that the person who makes the tea? Is he doing my job?
No, the crew's changed a bit as we went along. Some people had to go back home and they've been replaced by others. So we're probably going to set off in a day or so back to England. Maybe six on board, so it's a nice good number on the boat.
But you've got no one doing the washing up.
We take it in turn, Shelley. It's a sort of general thing where everyone does their bit, if you like.
And are you sailing through the night? So you've always got somebody on watch as well?
Yeah, no, we'll probably have three watches and two on each, because that's nice company and chat away about things. We keep a good lookout, keep an eye on the navigation as you go. So, once we're out of sight of Ireland, the next land we'll pick up is Land's End.
So when are you sort of leaving the lovely island? By the sounds of it, I wouldn't leave, but when are you actually due to sort of reverse and come back?
No, we'll leave in the next few days, Shelley. We just got a provision, the black pudding here is to die for, so we're going to stock up with that in the freezer. And I need to get some fuel, because I think it's going to be fairly calm, so we may have to do some motoring to keep up the schedule. But otherwise, we're just been out for dinner this evening in a lovely little restaurant here in Crosshaven. We're just sort of quietly relaxing and enjoying our stay here.
Well, I look forward to you coming back and actually putting some work into this podcast, because quite honestly, you haven't done anything yet.
Well, I've been away, Shelley, and then I felt it was safe hands with you, and I thought it was very good for you to practice on your own and gain confidence.
Well, thank you very much, Robin, and safe sailing, as they say, and enjoy yourself, and I look forward to you when you come back.
Okay, Shelley, well, let's catch up next week, but for the rest of the podcast, well, you can bring us up to date on the progress with Bluebird K7.
Yes, thank you. I caught up with Tracy Hodgson, who's the director of the Ruskin Museum in Coniston, the new home for the famous powerboat. The line wasn't the best, but it was a fascinating chat.
This is the H2O World Podcast.
It's been, 23 years since she left Coniston, almost to the day. So, yeah, we're just absolutely delighted that she's back and everybody can come and see her.
What can you tell us about the journey that you've been on in the recent years to get to this point?
Well, it's been a long journey. I've only been involved for the last 4 years. The trustees have been involved a lot longer. It's been a long, difficult journey sometimes to get it back. We obviously had to go down the legal route in the end, which we didn't really want to do. But everything is finalised now and she's back where she belongs. So, yeah.
So was it sort of people saying that they owned it or they didn't own it. I mean, I don't want to go too much down the heartache that you've been through, but just in a nutshell.
The agreement always was that K7 was donated to the museum in 2006 by Gina Campbell, Donald Campbell's daughter, and the Campbell Family Heritage Trust, on the condition that she would be restored to how she was before the crash, and then she would be put on permanent display in the purpose-built wing in the museum. Bill Smith was given the task to restore it, and which he did at no cost to the museum. He would do that using volunteer workforce and donations from the public. And it was always done as a charitable project. The charitable aim was to restore K7, which was fine. Everybody was on the same page for probably a good 10 years. And then in 2018, Bill Smith put in an ownership claim, which he claimed that he owned the parts that they had put onto it. So obviously we've tried to mediate, we've tried to have discussions with him. In the end, we had to go down the legal route, which it didn't get as far as a court room, but an official order, a Tomlin order, was agreed in the end. So it is all legal and binding, that it's all come back to us.
It's sad, isn't it? Because it is. You know, it was such an amazing, the story is incredible, and to have it rescued and then to have the sort of sour grapes put on it, it is a real shame. I'm glad you're all sorted now. So let's go back to the middle of the 20th century. Tell me about the Campbell family.
So obviously there was Malcolm Campbell. He was record breaking in the 30s, mainly cars really. And then Donald did his first record in 1955 on Ullswater, and then subsequently went on to do four on Coniston, one on Ullswater, one on Lake Mead, one on Dumble Young, and one on Lake Eyre.
Did he do more records than his dad did then?
Donald did 8 in total, both land and water, mainly water.
Amazing.
He's also still the only person to have achieved the land and the water speed record in the same year, even to the day.
Is it just Bluebird you have in the Ruskin Museum, or do you have any of his land craft as well?
The museum is predominantly Coniston based, if you will. So we have K7, which obviously ran on Coniston water, but we also have the Land Rover that was used for the land speed attempt in Utah, which is owned by a local businessman who runs the local Land Rover dealership.
So K7 wasn't Donald's first craft, was it? How many did he have before then?
That's a good question. Yeah, so K3 is still in the museum. K4 came to a sticky end. I think that crashed on Coniston, I believe. So there was them, and then obviously he had CN7 as well, which was the car that he did his land speed record in as well.
So presumably somewhere along the line, maybe with Malcolm, there was K1, 2 and 5
They're not all Campbell related. So you've got K1. So Miss England was K2. That was Seagrave.
Then
Crusader was John Cobb. So the K was literally the record attempts, the numbers that they used. I think it was the Lloyd's insurance number that they used for the Ks, and they used the numbers, whoever was using them.
Wow. And it's a shame, because obviously number 7 is a lucky number. It's my lucky number, number 7, and it wasn't Donald's lucky number.
There is a talk of a Campbell curse, who knows? I mean, he must have had some amount of luck to do the amount of records that he did and, you know, what he achieved. But he seemed to be dogged with bad luck towards the end, with the weather and press turning against him. And, you know, I mean, he'd had a bird strike before he did his 67 attempt. I think with a record break, and especially in those days, a lot of it is just waiting for the right moment.
Oh, gosh.
You know, right conditions. So
it's waiting for the right moment and then making sure you've chosen that right moment. And as we all know that, you know, like Donald, he was impatient. He turned around and said, I want to do it again. It's knowing when to say stop for today. Yeah. Let's try again tomorrow. That's the curse for all of us. We've all done it. We've all been there. We've all gone just one more time. That's the fateful thing to say, to be fair. We've spoken quite a lot about Donald. He was just a remarkable person, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, to do what he did, I mean, obviously you see people breaking records nowadays. To go 300 miles an hour in 1967 was unheard of. And, you know, to, I mean, when you actually look at K7, you see where he was sat behind, in front of that engine.
Yeah.
You know, it takes some doing, really. So, yeah.
Of course, you just, we had none of the safety and the technology that we've got now. And
no.
To even consider, it's quite mind-boggling to think that he was going to get in that machinery with the safety and the technology they had back then and go 300 mile an hour. Yeah. It's quite frightening.
It is. It was literally, they were just fixing it at the side of the lake as well. There was no aerospace or anything, you know, going on or anything. It was literally him and Leo and the Norris brothers fixing it at a cottage. And
Nowadays you'd have a team of like 50 people and God knows what going on.
Yeah.
The craft wasn't recovered until like it's many years after the crash, isn't it?
Yeah. 2001 it was recovered. But the family wanted it leaving, so it was underwater for 34 years.
Had anyone even looked at it for it before then?
People knew in Coniston where it was. There was a boy marking the spot for many years, and after he crashed, the Navy went down. I'm pretty sure they knew where it was, but they didn't have the technology or the expertise probably in those days to bring it up. I think it was probably Jean, the sister, Donald's sister, said, they just wanted leaving. I mean, he basically died doing what he did.
What he loved.
You know, yeah, leave it as a memorial, and that's how it was left for 34 years. Bill Smith went looking for it late 1990s, and I think it took him a couple of years to find it. When he did find it, he contacted Gina and asked about bringing it up. I think initially, Tonya didn't want it bringing up. Jean Wales didn't want it bringing up, and I don't think Don did either. But Gina was persuaded that the fact that Bill Smith had found it, now other people would find it, and there's always a risk of looting. So that's why it was brought up. And I think there was a diving incident as well where somebody nearly died, and Gina had said, well, instead of just diving on it, bring it up.
Yeah. It really was quite controversial, all of that at the beginning, wasn't it?
It was,
What impact did the crash have on, like, the local community of Coniston back then?
Even today, there's people who knew Donald personally. He was Coniston's adopted son, really. I mean, that's how they classed him. So there's still people alive today that come in to see K7. They remember the crash, they remember Donald. And it's, like I say, he was practically a local. He lived here quite a lot when he was doing his records. And, you know, Robbie, who is one of the original crew members, he still lives in the village. And he was, you know, they treat him as one of his own, and still do. People that are here that remember him. Even people that don't live in the area, they remember where they were when he crashed. It's almost a bit like, where were you when Kennedy was shot? Everybody knows where they were when Donald Trump crashed.
Yeah,
you know, if they were around. So we get people coming in every day and telling you, you know, they tell their story of what they were doing. And
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Why Coniston?
He did his first record on All Those Water, and I believe it wasn't long enough. So obviously he was attempting to go faster. There's a slight dogleg in All's Water, whereas Coniston is fairly straight. So he was attempting to go faster. So he needed a bigger lake. So Coniston, I mean, obviously worked very well for him because he had four records on it.
If he'd gone out to, say, to America and done on Lake Michigan, etc., would it have then not been a British record?
I think it's the craft. I mean, he did records on Dumbleyung in Australia, so that's a record. So I think it's the person.
So he never wanted to go out and find a great big lake in America and do it
there. Well, I mean, there was like Lake Mead went out there, but I think the conditions out there weren't as good as what they are here. I mean, don't get me wrong, we have some really bad weather in the Lake Districts.
So the restoration project, that was a mammoth task. How many years did it actually take in total?
It left Coniston in 2001 and it came back a couple of months ago, so 23 years in total. It's, I mean, they didn't get started on it straight away because they had to wait. It's quite a long story, but we were looking at heritage lottery funding, which had to be applied for. You couldn't touch it, the craft, before then. You couldn't start the restoration. So that, when that was realised that we weren't going to get funding, that's when everybody decided to go it alone. We would build the wing. Bill Smith would do the restoration. So yeah, a good 20 years really that it's taken to restore it. But
where did the finance come from then, if you didn't get anything from the lottery?
Yeah, it was public donations. So people giving to it, sponsorship, industry giving.
Lots of volunteers? Did volunteers
volunteer. It was all done on volunteer workforce, yeah. And they worked mainly Saturdays and Wednesdays. So it was part-time that they did it.
I would have loved to. If I'd lived locally, I would have definitely come in. And, you know, just to say that I did that teeny bit on Bluebird was amazing.
Yeah. I think that's the draw with it. I mean, the people who did it, they wanted to work on K7, and that's the draw.
And she's been back on the water at speed?
Yes. Bill Smith took her to the Isle of Bute. So they ran her on Loch Fad in 2018. And I think the official speed was 156, I think. So they got her up. She was planing. It was crew training. So it was a proving trial to make sure everything worked.
Why did they not go on Coniston, where she is?
And it's that's a lot of the controversy over it. You would have to ask Bill Smith that. I think the reason was that maybe things weren't maybe moving as fast as he maybe would have liked, obviously. Coniston is a public highway. There's a lot of red tape that needs to be dealt with before you can run anything on it, really. It's got a speed limit of 10 mile an hour, so you need to get an exemption.
I know that because we're only allowed up once a year to do our speed records.
Well, you know what's involved to sort of do that. I don't really know why he chose to go there. You'd have to ask him that. But they went up to Bute instead of Coniston.
Will she ever go back out on the water and run?
Yeah, we're looking at 2026, which will be the 70th anniversary of Donald's first record on Coniston. We've always said when we run her, it will be in tribute and celebration to Donald, not just to run her. But we need to speak to the National Park, because as we've just said, there's an exemption. It's a public highway. We can't have paddle boarders in the middle of the lake when you're doing 100 mile an hour.
It's got to be run on Coniston. That anniversary has got to be done on Coniston. There'll be so many people there watching it. They'll have a traffic problem. Don't worry about the water. It'll be a traffic problem.
This is it. People don't seem to realise that Coniston is a village, a very small village, and they think you can just go and put a boat on the water. They don't seem to realise what's involved in doing that, especially something... I mean, the crowds that were here when we brought K7 back on the 9th of March, it was unbelievable. It will be 10 times, 100 times that when we run it on the water. So everything has to be in place, from parking to accommodation to everything, you know. So it's not something that can be done overnight. But, we plan to do it.
Let's do it on Powerboat Record Week.
People have said that, but I'm not sure whether you would... You would want that happening at the same time.
Yes, of course we would. Any power boater that doesn't want that happening at the same time, they need to leave the sport, quite clearly. No, that would be absolutely amazing. Well, I will be there without fail. So we won't be doing it over Zoom next time, Tracy. We'll be face to face. Absolutely. Just tell us about your museum. What can visitors expect when they come up to look at all of the museum, as well as K7? What else is there to see?
Well, it's called the Ruskin Museum because it was set up in memory of John Ruskin, who was a Victorian philanthropist, artist, critic. He lived at Brantwood across the water, and he set up the Coniston Institute, which is the village hall, community hall next door. So it was a lot of it was for the miners, so they could have somewhere to go, so they could learn arts, crafts, things like that. So when he died in 1900, his secretary, Colin Wood, set up the museum in his memory. So we have a lot of John Ruskin's original collection, from his minerals, his drawings, everything. You know, we've got a lot of his original collection. So that's why it's called the Ruskin Museum. And we've also got another gallery, which is dedicated to Coniston. For a small village, Coniston has a lot of history. So you've got slate, copper. The first mountain rescue team was actually set up in Coniston. So there's a display on that. Swallows and Amazons, you've probably heard of that, Arthur Ransom. So we've got the Amazon board here as well. And of course, we've got the Bluebird Wing. So yeah, three very different galleries, but all very Coniston based, which is what our ethos is telling the story of Coniston.
I have been to the Ruskin Museum and I have looked around it because I've visited Coniston many times doing my record weeks. And I hope to definitely be there this year, so to come and have a look at Bluebird in all her glory. Good luck with everything, and I hope that you go forward and prosper at the museum.
Thank you very much.
Tracy Hodgson from the Ruskin Museum talking to Shelley about Bluebird K7 and the other exhibits in the Ruskin Museum on a line which, okay, wasn't the best. But thank you, Tracy. The link to the Ruskin Museum website is in our programme notes. And thank you to you for downloading this H2O World podcast. If you've just joined us, welcome. You can subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and you'll never miss an episode. And we'd love it if you'd share the link as well. Now, if there's something we ought to know about, email us, h2oworldpodcast@gmail.com.
The H2O World Podcast.